And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin and my guest. No, I'm her guest. I'm at Miss Ruby Merritt's house over in Carrboro, and she still got the balloon over her chair from her 102nd birthday party, which was held just a little bit ago. Ms. Merritt, thanks for letting me come visit you.
Well, thank you for coming.
Well, we thought we'd get together and maybe reminisce a little bit about what life was like when you were growing up in this area and how it's changed, and then what lessons they might be. You've just shown me a book that booklet or a book that you prepared about your memories, and you told me that the place where your shopping center was is now covered. Your shopping center is covered by the lake.
Yes, it's covered now in water with Jordan Lake. But I went there as a child every Saturday practically because that was our shopping center. They had everything in this general store from candy to horse collars. And my daddy and I always loved to go there. And I have a picture that was made there. The Chatham Wiggler train always came by there once a day, and it was parked behind the store when this picture was made.
Well, what was, tell us a little bit about your family and where they lived. I think maybe in northern Chatham County.
No, at the time I was born, we were in Chatham County, but my family came from Central Virginia because of the Loblolly Pines, and my father was a sawmill man, and he always had to put his mill near a stream because it was a steam mill, and he had lots of laborers, and I played with all of the children as I grew up and enjoyed every minute of it.
And did you live in a community, a town, or did you all just live out close to the mill?
Lived out close to the mill, and that was near what is called Seaforth Landing, I think it is now, but it was called Seaforth Store. At the time I was growing up, that's the store I just spoke of, and I could walk to school not too far from there when I was in the fifth grade. My mother taught me through the fourth grade, and because she was a teacher before she married in Virginia, and so she could teach me.
Well, we're visiting with Ms. Ruby Merritt on the occasion of her 102nd birthday, a few days afterwards, but we're sort of reminiscing about her growing up near to Chapel Hill. Now, you've lived in Chapel Hill and Carrboro for most of your life. How did you happen to move into town?
I didn't move into Chapel Hill, but when I was 13 years old, my father moved out on Durham Chapel Hill Road, and he had a planer in Durham, and that's why he moved, but mainly to send my brother and I to school without having to go to a boarding school because we had no high school anywhere near us. We either had to come to Chapel Hill and board or else go to Bon Lee or maybe to Cary, and I went first to Bon Lee High School, then to Cary, and then we moved, and I completed high school at Chapel Hill. I went to college here 1 year, and then I got my MRS degree after that.
Well, tell us about this MRS degree, and a lot of people in Chapel Hill, of course, remember Mr. and Mrs. Evan Merritt and Merritt's store, and so I assume that Evan Merritt gave you your MRS degree.
Yes, he certainly did. I was just 18 years old, but he was 24 and old enough to have more sense than I did. But anyway, I couldn't cook, and in those days you didn't have frozen food and like you do now, so I had to learn to cook. And but he was very patient with me and ate everything I cooked, and that made it sort of bad for him, but I finally learned how, and after having four children, of course, I had to know how to cook.
Well, I think a lot of people can testify that you became a pretty good cook, but I'm interested in what you saw in this 24-year-old Eben Merritt. How did you all meet, and what did your courtship, what was your courtship like?
His sister brought him to see. He was away at Park Mountain Institute. It was his last year in high school, and he came home for Christmas, and when he did, his sister brought him to meet me on New Year's Day, and he made the remark, well, what you do on New Year's, you do all the year. So that was just about it. When he got back from school, he kept coming to see me, and at Christmas of 1925, after I'd graduated from high school and gone to UNC all the summer, he gave me a diamond. And then we were married June the 12th, 26.
Well, was Mr. Merritt just a graduate of high school? Or what was this park? What was the place where he went to?
His park?
Park Mountain was a high school. And the reason he was there, he was on the farm, and his father always had him to start plowing in the spring. He'd have to miss school. And then in the fall, he'd have to wait late to go to school because he'd have to pick cotton or working the tobacco so that he couldn't go. So his brother, who was at Park Mountain, he was a minister, and he had a church there. And he took him to Park Mountain with him and took him off the farm so that he could finish high school. And that's all the education he had. And when I married him, he had one truck, and he hauled sand out of Morgan Creek to make cement for the buildings that they were building at Chapel Hill. And he was busy all the time. Later, he bought the store.
Well, we want to talk about the Merritt store because we've still got a Merritt store, and a lot of people have memories of it when Mr. Merritt was running it. But Ms. Merritt, the Merritt name is plastered all over Chapel Hill, so it must have been a family that had been in this area for a long time. What do you know about your husband's family?
He had seven brothers, whole brothers. He had three half-brothers and two sisters. And, no, I'm mistaken. There were seven of them all, seven brothers and sisters of his whole. And then he had one half-sister and three brothers. So they were scattered throughout Chapel Hill and had families.
Well, there is a Merritt Mill Road, and was that have anything to do with his family?
I cannot tell you that. I don't know. I know there's Merritt Mill Road, but I can't tell you if they had anything to do with it. But I don't know.
What about Mr. Merritt's family? Were they did they own a farm? Did they have a lot of land, and had they been farmers for a long time? And why did Mr. Eben Merritt, your husband, not stay in the farming business?
No, he didn't care for that. But the family, his father owned a farm just out of Chapel Hill. It's on the Mount Carmel Church Road. And, of course, it was sold after their deaths and divided among the children. And we don't own any of it now.
When you married Mr. Merritt, in the 1920s, you told us he was had one truck and was hauling sand, making a little bit of money. How did that develop into the business that he at Merritt's store?
Well, of course, the Depression began, and we went through that, and that didn't affect us too much because, after all, we didn't have any money, and After the Depression was over, he managed to get another truck. And then eventually, through the years, he had a bulldozer, front-end loader, and he got to bid to dig the foundation for the UNC hospital when it was started, and which he dug the foundation of the hospital. And
We're visiting with Ms. Ruby Merritt. She's just celebrated her 102nd birthday, and the Merritt family is well-known here in Chapel Hill. We remember the Merritt store, which is still in operation, but after this short break, we're going to find out a little bit more about how it got started.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Mrs. Ruby Merritt. She's telling me a lot about her family and how the Eben Merritt family got started back right before the Depression. You know something, Ms. Merritt, you told me that your husband got his start sort of in the hauling and construction business. And we've all read about the history of the UNC hospitals. I sure didn't know that your husband had dug the foundations for the original buildings at the medical school and hospital. But how long did he stay in the construction business?
He had to retire in 1974. Because he had a heart attack, and no doubt he wouldn't have had not been for that. But he ran the store 49 and a half years, and he had already sold his equipment because before he retired. And then he sold the business to Talbert, and I still own the store, but I lease the business. And the Brits own it now.
So although the Merritt store is being operated by other folks, they're renting the building from you. It's still the building still in the Merritt family.
Yes, it is. It belongs to me.
Well, tell me a little bit about the business. How did the construction business and the store work together? Did Mr. Merritt run both of those businesses, or did the store come along a little bit later?
He ran both of them for several years. Of course, now he wasn't in construction other than hauling, because he didn't build anything, but he would build ponds now. He would dig ponds with his equipment, and he also would build basements with his equipment.
Tell me how he acquired that store and what that business was like when it got started.
It was, the store was being operated by Mr. Sparrow. However, it belonged to Mr. Brud Bennett, and it was just down the hill down from where it is now. And then my husband owned the lot where it's built now. So when he got the money able to do it, he built the store on the lot so that he owned it completely by himself. And he went into the business in 1929. It's when he bought the store.
Well, the store was sort of the central operating place, I guess, for his business interest. I don't remember seeing you over in the store, but y'all lived across the street when I got to know you first. Did you always live close to the store?
Yes, we lived over the store just across the street for 25 years. And then we built just down the hill where the traffic light is now. We built a brick house down there. We had four children, of course, and it stayed there until after his death. It was torn down by the house was torn down by the DOT, who widened the road down there. And the ramp that goes down into 54 was in our drive.
So whenever I drive down South Columbia Street and get on the bypass or the big road.
If you want to go toward Carrboro, you go right down our drive. That was our drive to the house.
Well, I'd always wondered when I go near there and I remember that brick house where you all lived. I said, well, now, when they go by there, do they have sad memories or good memories? Or do they say, we wish, we're glad that we can remember our house, or say, I wish that DOT hadn't torn down my house?
Well, I have both sad and happy, because we had some happy days there and enjoyed it, of course. But after Eben passed away, I was anxious to leave, and I came to Carrboro to be near my daughters so that they can look after me.
Well, I'm here surrounded by Claire's one of your daughters, and it looks like maybe you're kind of telling her what to do. You might be kind of taking care of her a little bit. How does that work?
No, I don't take care of them. You're mistaken. They tell me I give them orders, which I do, but they are very patient with me, and I guess that's why the Lord has let me live 102 years to try their patience.
Well, that's good. I want to get back to the store, because my memory of the Merritt store back in the 1960s or late 1950s and early 1960s, when I was a friend of your son Wendell's and came up to visit, the store was kind of like a classic, one of the older stores where you could get anything you wanted and meet anybody you wanted. When you were looking out across the road from your house over to the store, what were your impressions of your husband's store?
It was a gathering place, I think, lots of times, especially late in the evening when the students were out of school. They'd come down, and my husband always loved our lawyers, the one that's studying law, because he'd tell them that it was a shame to have to go to school 4 years to learn how to lie.
No, now, he didn't really say that. Well, that reminds me of, I've been remembering one of his friends, who was a lawyer, still is, I think, Parker Wheaton. I don't know whether you remember Parker, but they got to be hunting buddies. And how did Mr. Merritt get into how did that become his favorite sport, I guess, or favorite hobby?
He was a hunter from the time he was a little boy. Before he could handle a gun, I've heard him talk about taking up a stick or something to try to kill him a rabbit to eat or anything like that. And then in later life, when he got older, he loved turkey hunting. And I still don't love turkey, because I had to help dress and cook too many.
Well, a lot of people who hunt turkeys, if they're honest, they will tell you that it's kind of hard to find a turkey and to kill a turkey. I remember that Mr. Wheaton and Mr. Merritt, with one or two shots, would bring down a turkey before anybody else could have seen it.
Well, that was just luck, I think. But now I know they did do that a great deal. And I always took up for the turkey. I was blamed for praying for the turkey.
What kind of meal did they expect you to prepare after they brought the turkeys home?
Oh, well, they would want me to bake the turkey, which of course I did, and I would prepare other things to go along with it. But I disliked taking care of that turkey, because they had pulled off the big feathers, but I had to do the bad part, and that was get all those little pin feathers out.
Well, when you cooked a turkey that had been brought down by your husband or one of his hunting colleagues and cooked it and ate it, did it taste as good or better than the one that you might buy in the grocery store?
Well, now, they claimed that it was better than that, but I don't think so, because lots of times it had a wild onion taste, and I did not like that. But I just simply didn't like turkeys. To eat turkey.
We're visiting with Mrs. Ruby Merritt, and we're doing it right after her 102nd birthday, which she celebrated here in Carrboro with her family and lots of friends. Ms. Merritt and I'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm the guest of Mrs. Ruby Merritt in her Carrboro home. Ms. Merritt lived in Chapel Hill for longer than I bet you anybody who's listening. In Chapel Hill and Carrboro than anybody who's listening to this program right now. And if I'm wrong, give me a call and we'll give you the chance to tell Mrs. Merritt and me that you should have been on the program rather than Ms. Merritt. We're talking about your husband and your husband's business. We're doing it because all of us get to reminisce and see a little bit about the Merritt store because it's still in operation. But let me ask you this question, Ms. Merritt. How is the Merritt store today, which is operated by friends of yours and people who are leasing the building from you, but it's not the same as it was when Mr. Eben Merritt was operating the store. How is it different?
Oh, yes. He had gas always, gas and oil, and now it's more like just a convenience store without gas. And it's now it has a little quick restaurant, and in those days he didn't have that. So that makes a big difference. It was just a general store then.
What were some of the things that could be packed into that little small building there that made it a general store?
Oh, well, he had everything from drinks to bacon, if you wanted to get bacon, and eggs, just about everything like that you would need to prepare a meal. Of course, not fresh vegetables or things like that. Occasionally, he would have potatoes or maybe go down to the peach orchard and get peaches when they were in or get apples or something like that. But it was different what it is now. Now it's more like a little restaurant, and it's real nice.
One of the things I learned from your son and from his friends was that one of the things you wanted to do when you went to visit Mr. Merritt in his store is that you wanted to get a look at that big wad on the back of his on his backside that was in his wallet. And the story was that he had a lot of dollar bills and $10 bills, and that he would carry a lot of money with him. And I wondered if that's true, and I wondered if you ever worried about him carrying so much money with him.
I worried a lot. He always had a pistol in his pocket when he'd come in at night or when he'd go out in the morning. But even then, I worried about it, yes. And he was robbed twice, but anyway, he didn't get hurt, and that was the most important thing, even though they got some money.
Well, yeah, that's the most important thing is to get your husband back safe. But the other thing about that is the other thing that I heard when I came up to visit your son and went hunting was that Mr. Merritt not only knew where there was a lot of land to hunt on, but that because he loved hunting, he acquired some land. And did he... is that true? And then did he acquire the land to hunt, or did he acquire it for an investment purposes?
Both. And, of course, some of it has been sold. Some of it's divided among his children. And so there's still the same land, but it's in different hands. It's in the I sold some of it, and then the children now own the other part of it, and I own some. Now, still, but he loved it for hunting, and then he wanted it for an investment.
One of the things that we've read about is that there is a park over near where you all used to live and near the store, sort of across the road. And tell us about that land and how you happened to give it up.
Yes, the town wanted it, and I was glad to let it go to the town, and they own it now. And I think they're trying to make a walkway to it so that people can enjoy it.
This is land along the creek. It's beautiful land. And what did you all use it for? Was it, it's called, I think, Merritt's Pasture.
Yes, it was a pasture because he had some beef cattle put into there and kept it for a pasture.
Now, Mr. Merritt's over at the store. You're raising four children, but they pretty soon got out of college. How did you spend the years after your children finished college?
Well, for a while, of course, I kept the books for the business. And then when he sold the business, he and I enjoyed going places more than we ever had as when we went to work. So that was a pleasure. For 7 years we had it, that we could go visit our son in Richmond or go wherever we wanted to. So I didn't have too much to do after the children left.
When I was driving over here to Carver to visit you, and I was coming from Chapel Hill, I passed by those big tall buildings that have come up between Carver and Chapel Hill, and then I passed along the busy and what looked like prosperous streets, both in Chapel Hill and Carver, and I thought, well, I'm just going to ask Ms. Merritt if all this doesn't kind of bowl her over, the change in these two towns.
It really does. I can hardly believe it. We don't have just a village anymore. We have a city. And when you think about paying the taxes, it feels like a city.
We've talked about your children, and I'm a big fan, and from way back, of your son, Wendell, who's a prominent doctor and surgeon in Richmond. Just don't see him as much, and he seems to slip in and out of town without some of his old friends knowing that he's here. But everybody admires your son and is, I think a lot of us share a lot of pride in his success. Tell us, now, he was the spoiled little boy. Tell us about his sisters.
Oh, well, the three sisters say he's spoiled, and perhaps he is, because he's my baby no matter how old he gets. And he had polio when he was 3 years old, and naturally we had to spoil him a little bit after that. But he has been a good son, I must say. And my three daughters all have been teachers. They're retired now, and so I've been very proud of my children.
Did all three of your daughters teach public school close by here, or did some of them branch out in other parts of the state?
Two of them taught in Carver all those years, and then one taught in Winston-Salem, where she married and lives.
Children sort of, you have four children, and all four of them would say, well, we're the this is the first generation that we've got university and graduate education. Did you start out thinking, I'm going to be sure all of these children finish college and have a profession?
No, we didn't start out that way. We gave them the choice. We always said that we were going to make them go through high school if that was possible. But then we would offer them college, and if they wanted to do it, I'm so proud that they chose to do it.
We're visiting with Mrs. Ruby Merritt, and we're doing it on the occasion, a few days after, of her 102nd birthday and many, many years of living in Chapel Hill and Carver, and we'll be right back to visit with her more after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm having the pleasure of visiting with Mrs. Ruby Merritt right after her 102nd birthday, and we're doing it in at her house in Carrboro. And Ms. Merritt, you've just been so generous sharing with me your memories. I'm wondering about some of the things that happened on your 100, some of the memories that came back to you on your recent birthday and what you all talked about as the family gathered together.
More about grandchildren than anything else. I have 7 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren, so I feel like I'm very well blessed, and they were all here for my birthday. And I have 1 granddaughter in Germany, and she even came from Germany. I have 2 grandsons in California, and one has a family, and the other one's single. They all came for my birthday. So that made me very, very happy on that birthday. And we talk more about grandchildren than anything else.
When that's amazing. Your memories take me back to the 1950s, late 50s and 60s, when I knew your son Wendell. And you don't remember this, but I came up to visit y'all in fall of 1958 on Thanksgiving, and Mr. Merritt and Wendell and Parker Whedon and some others let me tag along for turkey hunting. I sure didn't do any good, but they brought back some turkeys. The other time I came to visit was when Wendell was in medical school in the early 1960s, and he was living in apartments that I think Mr. Merritt had maybe built or owned or somehow. Tell me about those apartments.
Yes, we had planned to build some apartments on this property, and when Wendell was in med school, he was staying at home, and the telephone was ringing in all times of night. He was coming in and out all times, and that's when we decided it was time to build and give him an apartment and get him out of our house.
Well, now, did it work, or did he keep on coming back for his mama's home-cooked meals?
He came back. Every time he'd get an opportunity, he'd come back to eat.
Now, looking back at times, we were thinking about those 1960s, which were times that were traumatic for a lot of people. We were going through the protest on the Vietnam War, and also the changes that we were going through as a result of the civil rights revolution. And it was kind of tough for all of us. Y'all were sort of old time Chapel Hill people. And I wonder how Mr. Merritt and you and your family adjusted to sort of the turmoil of the 1960s and then the changes that have taken place since then.
Well, it wasn't easy, but we accepted it, and therefore we got along all right with it.
It's hard to get back into that without going into great lengthy detail. I remember that you had talked about when your daddy was in the timber business or in the logging and lumber business, that the hard work that went along with that business is something that we just don't see very much anymore. We don't see anybody working quite that hard. We're able to make a living without working quite as hard as the people did when you were growing up. And do you notice that? And do you think maybe we ought to be working a little harder?
I certainly do notice it. There's a big difference. My husband worked real hard because we absolutely had nothing when we married, and he had to work for everything we got, and he worked real hard. And my father worked real hard as I was growing up. We raised what we ate. We had a pig. We had vegetables in the garden, and my mother canned, and of course, we didn't freeze in those days. We didn't know about it. But everybody had to work, and I think that it should be today that very way, because children are being reared to have fun all the time. And I think they need to learn that you can't have fun all the time and accumulate anything.
Well, that's a good lesson for all of us. The other thing that that interest me about the families who've been in Chapel Hill and Carrboro and the for a long time is about the churches. And would you tell us a little bit about your family's church and whether you've changed churches and what it is for 102 when does a 102 year old able to get up and go to church from time to time? How does all that work?
I guess my mother took me to church when I was about 3 weeks old, and I've never known anything else except since I've gotten disabled to go. I've always been very active in church, and I was reared in Bell's Church in Chatham County. But when I married 84 years ago, I went with my husband to Mount Carmel Church, and I loved it and still love it, and I'm still a member there.
So you've been a member of Mount Carmel Church for 84 years. Well, tell us a little bit about your experience with the church, and has it changed at all, and if so, how?
Oh, it's grown, of course, and I played the piano there from about 65 years plus, and I loved every minute of it, and it's changed some, but it still has a lot of the same characteristics, and of course, we have a much larger building now than we did before, and we're getting new members, and I'm very happy about it.
All right, you played the piano for 60-some years, and has the music changed, or have you been able to hold on to the old-time hymns?
Oh, yes, we have some of old-time hymns and some of the new, which is good because the youth especially love the new ones, and since I don't get to go anymore, I have to listen by CD, and I'm very happy that I can.
Well, that's amazing. So you're able to participate in the services because they will send you a recording of the service, and so you're able to listen to that. Now, you are so vigorous and active and alert, but you say that you have a little bit of a hard time getting around. Are you able to get out at all, or do you stay here mostly and just visit by telephone and by people coming to see you?
Yes, I'm pretty much homebound now. I haven't been out of the house since February, but I hope to get out pretty soon. I do have a ramp, and I have a wheelchair, and I have my daughters who give me a push, so I'm hoping to get out before long.
Well, what are the things that you miss watching in Chapel Hill? I guess it's a way for me to ask the question, what were your and Mr. Merritt's favorite things to do or to see or to visit or to celebrate in Chapel Hill and Carrboro?
I guess our favorite was going to the ball games. We went to the football games and took Wendell on our knee when we would go there. And then we would go to the basketball games, and we loved every minute of it. That was mostly our recreation.
Well, a lot of people like that today, and they're building more seats to the stadium so more of us can participate in that. Well, now, people are going to shoot me for asking you this question, but I've got a selfish interest in asking it. You know, I love Chapel Hill and I love Carolina, but I still hold on to my Davidson connections. And one of the great things about going to Davidson was that I met your son there, and he loved Chapel Hill. He never pretended he didn't. But so I never could get him to answer the question about why he decided to go to Davidson rather than staying and going to school, doing his undergraduate school at Chapel Hill.
Dr. Hedgepeth influenced him to go to Davidson. He said that was the best pre-med school there was.
Now, that's interesting. Dr. Hedgepeth was the admissions man at Carolina. So Wendell was smart enough to do a little planning in advance and go ask that. How did that – well, it worked out. I'm going to ask you how it worked out. I guess I have to say it worked out okay because Wendell got admitted to Carolina and became a very successful doctor, was he happy with the results? Was Wendell happy happy that he followed Dr. Hedgepeth's advice?
Oh, he certainly was, and he still loves Davidson there. And we were happy, too, because he made good there.
Let me ask you this about growing up in Chapel Hill. Now, Wendell was deciding along the way what he wanted to do. How did he get bit by the medicine bug, and when did you all notice it, and did you encourage it, or were you worried about the hard work that a doctor had to go through to get his professional credentials?
He decided, I think, pretty soon after having polio. Now, that seemed to be its reason, and he talked to Dr. Hedgepeth. As I say, he was a big influence on Wendell's life, no doubt about that. And he always wanted to be a doctor, though, just like my three daughters always wanted to be teachers.
Well, you've got to be mighty proud. I'm sorry we're running out of time, but I want you to reflect now. You seem so wonderfully alive and ready to go after your 102nd birthday. So maybe it's a little early to start planning the 103rd birthday, but what would you like to do for your 103rd birthday?
Oh, my, that's too far ahead. But I'm still working on it. Staying alive and staying able to take care of myself to a certain extent with the help of my daughters.
Lots of folks who are not able to get by to see you, but who remember you from all of their connections in Chapel Hill, at church, from the store, from the community activities that you and your children were involved in, probably listening in. And I haven't given you a chance to say to them any message that you'd like to leave them with as we finish up this wonderful visit, Ms. Merritt. Any words of greeting you'd like to say to your friends?
I hope you folks won't be ashamed of me when you listen to this. And I love every one of you.
Well, this has been a great visit. This is D.G. Martin. I've been visiting with Mrs. Ruby Merritt after her 102nd birthday, celebrating it right here in Carrboro. Thanks to Ms. Merritt, and thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be right back here on Who's Talking Soon.